This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is iFanboy Special Edition, The Batman. Fanboy Special Edition, The Batman. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I am here with Mike Romo.
Hello.
And special guest, Hank Nazarbat.
What up?
Very special.
Mike used to write for iFanboy and appears on shows. If you're a patron, you're familiar with Hank from the Hangouts. And we are here to talk about The Batman, the newest film from Warner Brothers DC, and director-writer Matt Reeves. He co-wrote the film with Peter Craig, and we will have spoilers in this conversation, so if you haven't seen the film, you may want to pause it and come back. This is a film that's we've been waiting for a while. It was COVID-delayed. It was delayed not just from general COVID, but Batman got COVID, so they had to shut down for a while. And we've been hearing about this movie, seeing trailers, seeing photos for a couple of years now, so now the film's finally out. It has a runtime of 2 hours and 55 minutes.
Boy, is it long.
Stars Robert Pattinson as Batman, Zoe Kravitz as Selina Kyle, Catwoman, Jeffrey Wright as Jim Gordon, Colin Farrell as the Penguin, Paul Dano as Riddler, John Turturro, surprising appearance as Carmine Falcone. A lot of people will talk about them as we go, but let's talk about it first. So are you guys Matt Reeves fans? He came from the Apes films, the highly acclaimed
I really liked the first one of the Apes films. I actually bought it on Blu-ray. When I saw that it was Matt Reeves, I will admit I had no idea who he was.
I don't even think he made the first Apes movie. I think he did the sequels.
Oh, well then.
Dawn of and War of Four.
Oh, see, I didn't like the second one, and I never saw the third one, so never mind.
I have only seen Cloverfield, which I enjoyed but not loved. Yeah. But that's the only experience I have with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he a TV guy?
He started in TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I think I'm on the same boat as Mike. I saw the first Ape film, the first one was Burton, right?
Rise of the...
No, James Franco one.
The Franco one. Really good.
I saw that one, and then I don't think I saw any other ones. So I didn't really have... As a director, writer, I didn't know what to expect. I wasn't that excited. Cloverfield, I'd forgotten he did Cloverfield. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. That was a lifetime ago.
But when you guys heard it was 255, what were your initial thoughts?
It was too late for me to do anything about it.
You know what? Honestly, I came into this really knowing nothing except for the casting and knowing about the Riddler. I had watched one trailer. I had honestly zero interest in seeing the film. I came into it excited to talk to you guys about it, but really had zero expectations. I just kind of assumed it was just going to be like every other Batman film. So I really came into it with very low expectations, and Matt Reeves was probably at the bottom of the barrel in terms of a bucket full of expectations. And the time thing, I didn't even know until I saw Whitney basically asleep next to me. And then I checked my watch and couldn't believe it was 11 o'clock. We started at 8:30 and I was like, I am still here.
Well, I mean, there's people who don't like long movies that long. And I've had lots of discussions about this.
If it earns it, fuck it. You know, that's kind of how I felt too. By the time I already knew it was 3 hours, I was like, fuck it, man. Let's see what they do.
Yeah.
I think I'm a little more open-minded towards that than some other people.
Yeah. I certainly don't categorize a film that I'm going to like it or not based on its length. Yeah, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. If it's got a story that is compelling. Now, I will say this one sort of felt like a wedding toast that kept going and going. I kept feeling like I was going to lift my glass to drink, and then the movie kept going. So I felt like it had several different endings. I feel like it could have probably cut quite a bit. But I wasn't like, well, prove it to me that you're worth my three-hour investment, which was an expensive investment because I saw it at the iPick on Westwood, which is a $20 ticket.
Let's just dive into it.
Yeah, let's go.
Overall, I liked it. I had a really good time. There's a lot in the film, and I think I need to see it again to really sort of dive into it because there's so much going on. There's a lot of characters. There's a lot of story. It was. It almost at times felt like it was paced like a three-hour TV special. You know, it kind of had segments.
Yeah, it definitely had like segments. To me, it felt very much like a straight-ahead comic book in as much as I found a comic at the airport. It was issue number 4, and I just started reading it. I really liked that it just kind of like just started happening. There was no preamble.
I completely agree. I think one of the smartest things they did with this movie is trust the audience to know who this character is, and their priority was to play with that rather than to tell us the same story we've seen 5 times. I thought that was really refreshing, and to start the movie that efficiently was a great idea. And I do think that the intro to this movie is shorter than you would expect with a 3-hour movie. They really just get to it.
Yeah.
Right.
Like the first act of this movie is long, but it is enjoyable. Like the preamble is so short.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lot of fun that they were just here. The movie's starting.
I will admit, so I was a little distracted because there must have been a crew maybe from, I felt like a bunch of people that knew people in the movie or something. There were a lot of, like, I saw it in an iPic, so it's a very small house, and there were a lot of people like texting their friends and taking pictures of themselves while at the theater as if to say, hey, look, we're going to see it, office mates or whatever. So that was kind of distracting. And then when I looked up, you know, there's kind of this shot and we're looking at from the character's point of view into the window of the guy. Yep. He was breathing heavily, and I kid you not, I thought that was Batman in a mask, breathing heavily.
Well, yeah, they don't tell you who it is until he appears. So,
and then I realized, oh, it was the other guy, but I was like, I thought I had missed something. So I just didn't know if it was a bat voyeur moment or whatever. So
well,
I was
he
really
is later on. He's a
yeah, he certainly
later
is.
On. He's a bat
very
voyeur.
Creepy. Holy Selena, Kyle. Underwear Batman.
What I think the best thing about this movie is that it is a story that we have not seen from a Batman film, in that it's a detective story.
Yeah.
He did very, very little detecting in the Nolan trilogy. The most I can think of is when he pulled the bullet out of the wall in The Dark Knight and analyzed it. And that was about it.
And that's technology.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a lot of just, you know, looking at things. You could say maybe they need to tighten up him looking at things, but like, it sort of added to the atmosphere of, you know, it's a cliche to call it like a noir detective story, but it adds to the atmosphere of him in the shadowy room looking at clues and thinking. And that's in Batman we've never, ever seen outside of the comic books before. So I thought that was really refreshing to see, well, he's actually being the Dark Knight detective here.
Absolutely.
Which was great. And almost like Gordon was his partner for like the middle hour, like they were running around together.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
that was so much fun. And even Selena, I mean, they were a crew there for a little bit.
The trio of them, I thought that part was really, really fun to watch their dynamic. And
they had excellent chemistry.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the biggest question mark for me going into it was Robert Pattinson, right? Because, you know, if Batman doesn't work, then the whole thing falls apart. And I thought he was great.
Well, what was great is that we...
Surprisingly good.
We got more of him as the Batman. This is a movie about the Batman. Bruce was just an afterthought, which I thought which was kind of a great choice, which made me think about the comics a lot. Like, for a while, for seven issues, it's just going to be a Batman detective story. And there wasn't this kind of, like, frustrating struggle of trying to show his playboy around town type of thing. They were not interested in that at all, which I thought was actually pretty cool.
That's actually my favorite thing about the movie is just in a global sense, this movie had a vision. It had a vision and approach for how they wanted to treat the character and the city and the world.
Yeah.
And they kind of just threw all those other elements away that they didn't want. And they ended up with something that was really unique. And I feel like so many of the elements in the movie maybe wouldn't work in other Batman or other superhero stories, but they worked so well in this specific vision. And that brings up a bigger point of, like, I feel like you can discredit this movie for what it isn't if you wanted to. That's not how I choose to see film and not how I choose to see this movie. But if you just want to celebrate what this movie is, there is so much to celebrate. If you want to say, well, I want Playboy Bruce Wayne in my Batman movie, like,
yeah.
Okay, well, go watch those other, you know, like Michael Keaton is fucking great at that. Go do that, you know?
I also think that they're leading in that direction, right? You know, we start off Batman's in a really dark, literally dark place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's even the discussion he has along the whole film with Alfred is you are not honoring your family. You're not honoring your legacy. And then by the end of it, he realizes I can't be this dour.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't be the Avatar of Vengeance. In the very beginning, he saves that dude from the Joker thugs. And the guy's afraid of him. And by the end of it, he's helping kids out of the water. And he's like, I got to be the Avatar of Hope, even though that's Superman. But got to believe if Matt Reeves has a plan here for like a trilogy, then it's got to be an arc of Batman sort of rediscovering his humanity.
Sure.
That's what it feels like they're letting toward.
I was going to say that moment at the end when they pull the mask off that Riddler goon.
Yeah.
And they say, who are you? And he says, I am vengeance. To me, that was Matt Reeves in the movie saying, this is the cycle of vengeance. It doesn't go anywhere. There's no progress here. You know, you have to have something else in your engine.
Right. It's like the whole dig two graves thing.
I liked how spare it was. Usually there's a couple of side plots that don't get a lot of shrift in, or they try to pay attention to. Here it was just kind of one plot barreling through.
Oh, yeah.
And it sustained itself.
Story,
exactly. I mean, there was, you know, Selena had a little bit of a side thing, but they were all in service. They were all in the wake of this main story, which I thought was really refreshing as well. And the fact that they were able to sustain it for 3 hours is actually quite a trick.
Oh, yeah.
It's really as you sort of buckle up and you're in. It was pretty unrelenting in that way.
Absolutely. That's a word that came to mind as well. But to Connor's point, that is in the style of noir detective stories where like the case and the character are the movie. You know, we're not going to have frills on this thing or extra fat on it. And the fact that they had that kind of movie and sustained my attention for 3 hours is pretty special.
Long Halloween kind of had that, right? And Dark Victory.
I really thought about
Long Halloween was a very heavy influence. There was whole dialogue bits from Long Halloween in the movie.
I just loved having that kind of clock in the sky almost of there is an impending, something's going to happen. We have to figure this out quick. And it was almost like in real time in a way. It seemed like it just took place over a couple of days.
Yeah, I feel that way too.
People do listen to this show who have seen the movie. So real quick, the idea of the story is that the Riddler is uncovering corruption and hypocrisy in Gotham City. He's a serial killer. He starts off, he kills the mayor, and then he goes through and kills the police commissioner. And he's going through and exposing that the government and the mob, the mafia families, are all intertwined and everyone's involved with each other. And everyone who claims to be the savior of Gotham is actually destroying it. And so that's the whole thing that Batman is trying to stop. At the same time, he wants to expose the corruption as well. So it's a very intricate, complicated situation where what is the Penguin's role in all this? And what are the cops' role in all this? And what the DA? And there's a lot of things that they have to get through to get to the end of this.
Right. My biggest issue with the movie is that the plot was pretty complicated.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why I had a hard time tracking it is because this giant bust that they have, the biggest bust in the history of Gotham PD, happens off screen. It's off. Yeah. It's outside of the movie. So yeah. for me to contextualize that kind of stuff was a little more difficult for me because, like, 2.5 hours into the movie, they're talking about an event, and I'm like, did I see that 2 hours ago? Or
sure. Am
I
like, sure. You know, like, no, they keep referring to it.
They keep referring to it, and I'm like, did I see that? I don't remember that. What was that character name from 2 hours ago? I can't fucking remember.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just an idiot, but like Connor said, like, there's a lot in this movie, and it's just, they really pack it in.
Yeah.
That was my biggest issue with the movie, is it was a little complicated. It wasn't complicated enough where I wasn't enjoying myself, but it was complicated enough where I was like a line or two behind.
I felt like it was kind of suffocating the corruption, which I felt like Bruce at times was kind of like not helpless, but really like to try to change. The corruption was entrenched, and you really got that feeling. Like, mm-hmm. how are you going to battle this? And I was like, it's for a while. I was like, this is going to be too big for this movie for him to do this, which I thought was kind of a cool struggle.
Well, he even says that. He says, what's the point of this? I've been doing this for 2 years. Enough. It's gotten worse.
Yeah.
And it's always sort of the start. And this is early Batman. He's been Batman for 2 years at this point.
Yeah.
That's always sort of the start of his story is this is way too big. But then Gordon comes along and Gordon becomes police commissioner. And it's like baby steps.
Well, he doesn't. Forward and takes... He doesn't, right?
They well, no, I thought they were going to announce that at the end press conference, but he's Lieutenant Gordon here.
I actually thought about that towards the end. I'm like, wait, are police commissioners assigned or are they elected? Like, can they just put...
They're appointed.
They're appointed, right? Like, she could just appoint them right now. I thought about it while that scene was happening.
That happened in the Nolan film. Remember, Commissioner Gordon?
Oh, that's right. Just a brief aside. So my expectations going into this movie were very... I was just not involved, really.
Right.
And I saw the trailer that came out like 2 years ago of him like walking through that crime scene or whatever. I haven't heard anything since. I haven't paid attention to any of the chatter.
Same.
I thought it was a one-off movie.
Mm-hmm.
So when they started, like, there were two specific moments where I was like, oh shit, are they setting up another movie? Which was, he's not Commissioner Gordon yet, and the Penguin is not the big crime boss in town.
No. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, if he's not the big crime boss, like, if he's the number two, are they setting something up?
What's interesting is they're doing two HBO Max tie-in series.
Oh.
Oh, really?
One about the cops and one about Penguin.
Would it be Jeffrey Wright?
I would assume so. I assume they're just going to be, like, you know, six episodes.
But is it taking place in the... The ending with it was like that whole... Remember when Gotham had gotten hit by that earthquake? Was it Cataclysm? That whole... Wasn't a year-long series? So...
That was. Yeah.
I thought that was really kind of like, because I just thought this was going to be one off. And I'm like, wait, are they going to do a Cataclysm style Batman?
There's no easy way of that ending. You know, it's, and I want to get to the ending in a second because that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah,
I do want to take a step back and talk about the art direction, which was really interesting. The costume, I kept going back and forth on, but I love how 70s inspired it was, including the muscle car Batmobile, which is very reminiscent of the muscle car Batmobile he had in the 70s comics. And in the 70s comics, he also lived in the tower and not in the manor.
Right.
So from the grimy grunginess of the city to the iconography of Batman, it felt very 70s inspired.
Connor, I was going to ask you this. You would have a better point of reference in this than I would. But is there a precedent for Batman having the Batcave through a train track like that?
I thought that was cool.
I thought it was such a cool idea.
It reminded me of Lex Luthor's old home in Superman 1, where he's also in an abandoned subway station.
Can you think of any?
Possibly in the tower, because there was a time when he was living in the tower, but not in the manor. But it was cool.
I kept thinking of Franco Villa's. Remember there was that Batman, maybe it was just concept art?
Matt Reeves said Franco Villa was a big influence on it. Was the 70s Batman art he was doing.
Yeah, there was that one, I don't remember, but there's a Batman series where he's like wearing a trench coat almost. But the silhouette was very much like the Franco Villa art that I'd seen with the big sort of swooping. That was a very different car, but that silhouette of his costume was pretty cool. Very functional costume.
The introduction of the car, not in the background when we saw it, but when it was finally in the moment.
Yeah.
I thought there was some great sound design in this film.
Amazing.
Excellent,
yeah.
Again, just he wanted to scare people with his car.
Yeah.
The red eye sort of thing, and it just rumbles at you. Like, it was this beast coming. It was like, I was like, shit. Like, I was in a very big, loud theater, and I was like, fuck, this is not a joke. And then the way we first see Batman is, you know, these Joker thugs, these guys inspired by the Joker, are menacing this guy in the subway, and he comes out of the shadows. But instead of the normal way that Batman does that, which would be to appear silently, we get the sound of the footsteps, which they use several times in the film. I thought that was so interesting and kind of cool. It was like this staccato sense of doom coming at you. And he wasn't running. He wasn't in a hurry.
And he knows you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I am coming.
It was like a Western, right? Like, I almost felt like I heard spurs when he saw the soul. Yeah.
There was great sound stuff and great visual design. The costume, I came around on by the end. I like that it was gray and black, first of all, because I just hate the all black costume. Mm-hmm. Mm. It was seemed to be very inspired by the video games, like the chess the logo Asylum was very stuff. Much like the Arkham video games. It was fine. By the end of it, I quite liked it. I liked the mask a lot.
I thought the mask was one of the best ones. Very functional. You're right.
Yeah, functional. It gave movement, expression. And by the end of it, I was pretty happy with the way it looked. I wasn't sure in the beginning. I wasn't sure based on the promotional materials and things.
I liked it with a little scruff on his face.
Yeah, I like that he had the wear and tear on there.
Yeah.
Again, like with every Batman franchise, I think they like push the verisimilitude, you know, mm-hmm. and
yeah.
I feel like this was very lived in. And I also, they kind of, it was a great balance of he is just a human, but he is larger than life a little bit. Like, I think a lot of credit needs to go to Robert Pattinson and mm-hmm. the costume designers and the way that they shot Batman. They shot Batman with such presence mm-hmm. in every scene. He had so much gravity. And I think that was a lot due to how grounded that design was and how they really rode the balance between like he's larger
but they also didn't they weren't afraid to play with how weird it was, you know, again, things we don't see in these films, him just hanging out in a crime scene with all the cops.
Yeah,
yes, yes, and
that was great scenes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he just looked weird.
He looks
and out
ridiculous
of place. So you got this sense of the cops being like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. Like, why are they you touching this stuff? Like,
are you with it? What is this, Gordon? What are you doing? Who was your buddy? Your buddy's freaking me out.
Yeah,
but I also really liked the camera in his eye.
That was pretty cool.
He kept staring really hard at things in that first crime scene. You're like, is he just really thinking?
Really intense.
He's capturing images, and that was just, I thought that was all very cool and interesting.
And also, but stark contrast, his sturdiness and that sort of gravitas. When he is Bruce, he's like just almost ethereal, right? He's almost...
He can't function.
He's just... Yeah. He reminded me a little bit of The Crow, right? Brandon Lee in a weird way. Just like, without the suit... He is not grounded, and he's almost like being a strong breeze could push him over.
Well, Selina says as much in the movie. She said, "Who are you under there? Oh, this is the real you."
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
There's no point in looking under the mask. So let's talk about Selina and the villains and the supporting cast.
She was great.
Zoe Kravitz was just incredible. I think she becomes instantly sort of the iconic Catwoman in this movie.
Unbelievable. Right. Her just the way she walked. There were so many times when I thought about Tim Sale's art, just the way she would walk off camera. Uh-huh. It was just very powerful, but very slinky. She just really was that character. It was great to see
her. And I love Michelle Pfeiffer. Yeah. She's great in Batman Returns, but like this film feels more like probably the truest of the comics that we've seen so far. And so in that sense, she feels truer to the comic Catwoman than... Mm-hmm.
Well, again, Michelle Pfeiffer is right for that. You know, Zoe Kravitz in Batman Returns would be weird, and Michelle Pfeiffer in this would be weird, you know?
Yeah.
It just totally worked. This vision for the character totally worked. Again, if you want her to be a straight-up villain, you're going to be disappointed. But if you're open for this new kind of story, the closest this comes to like a B story or whatever you want to call it is they really, for the first time, sold a Batman romance story really, really well. They really stuck the landing on that, and they really sold it realistically. I thought that was, in some ways, the heart of the movie. It was really, really great.
Well, so much so that when they, at the end, where they split, one goes one direction, the other goes the other direction, I was just as emotionally compelled and interested to follow her down the road, which is a real trick,
because he felt the same way.
Yeah.
Well, if you're looking at it from a business standpoint, now they very easily can do a Catwoman and Bloodhaven movie.
It'd be fantastic. She made that look effortless. And also the way she was so good with the different costumes and the different characters that she had to play. Mm-hmm. She was just like what Bruce used to have to do with all of his costumes in the book. She was doing that like all the time. Talk about nine lives. She kept putting on all these personas to get what she wanted. And she was such a really terrific cat burglar. That even that little tiny thing where she used that hole to open up the safe, where she had these little very specific tools. You saw them in her apartment. Yep. Mm-hmm. She had this entire backstory, entire set of capabilities and skills that they never really shined a bright light on, but she just sort of imbued it as being natural to her. So I thought that was I thought all of the tech was very natural and lived in, and they didn't make a big deal out of it. And I thought that was great.
When she had her mask.
Yeah.
the knit hat that was just cut out for her eyes. I was like, oh man, I hope they don't upgrade this. This is so cool. Perfect. And I was so relieved that they didn't.
I kept wondering, oh, when is she going to come? At the end of the film, she's going to have some sort of bat version
of it. I thought he was going to give her one. I thought he was going to be like,
I was so relieved when they were like, nope, that's her, because that's what cat burglars do. You know,
that's perfect. Yeah. That was Whitney's favorite part by far, was
that she caught while she was awake.
And she had great fight choreography. I thought all the fight choreography was great, and you really felt the weight of the punching, but her sort of ballet-esque... The kicking and the scratching was very much, you know, the kicking and the scratching and...
Yeah, and even her exit when she, I can take care of myself and jumps off the scaffolding was just, again, effortless, like a cat. Even when she goes, her first scene when she leaves her apartment, boom, bump, bump, just like a cat going down the fire escape. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Was anyone having more fun than Colin Farrell?
No.
You know who was? My wife, who afterwards... First thing she said when the credits roll is she said, who the hell did they get to play the Penguin?
Wow.
Where did this guy come from? He's got that scar down his face. Like, I haven't seen that guy in anything.
Wow.
And then I had a lot of fun saying, that is heartthrob Colin Farrell.
They should give the Oscar to the makeup department now. But I had opposite direction with my wife, who said, I didn't come to this movie to see Colin Farrell under 4 pounds of makeup.
I want to see those abs, baby. So let me hear that brogue.
And the thing is, you know, Colin Farrell is kind of like Brad Pitt in the way that they're both character actors who are stuck in leading man bodies. And Colin Farrell very quickly was like, I don't want to do this anymore, and has been trying to do more interesting parts. And this was
He's been on a tear for years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he is terrific in this part.
He's fantastic.
Unrecognizable.
He's the only one who gets laughs in this whole movie.
And that's
movie.
My only criticism of the movie really was that it was very unrelentingly... serious, Dower. And they could have used a little bit of lightheartedness. I'm not saying make it a comedy or even make it a Marvel movie. I'm just saying maybe one more character that occasionally says something that was mildly amusing, because everything was really, really intense.
It was tough with that crew of characters. I don't know where, I mean, other than the Riddler, I don't know where that... You know what the biggest laugh of the movie for me was?
So usually Alfred's the lighthearted
right.
bit.
He's the one kind of like cutting Batman down to size. Yeah. The biggest laugh for me in the movie was, oh, fuck, I just forgot it.
It was the Riddler. It's got to be Paul Dano's.
Oh, my God. It was kind of surreal for me, but I was like, oh, it's 2022, so I guess we're just watching a movie where Batman FaceTimes the Riddler. And, like, you see the little, like...
Yeah, your little mini thing.
Whatever you call, like, the mini thing of Batman just, like, holding a camera in his face.
It was great.
Yeah, sure, fuck it, why not? Like, and when he's talking to his stream later, and he's like, hey, guys, thanks for the likes and comments. Like,
yeah, that was hilarious.
Riddler as influencer.
I thought he was going to say, like, let's press that like and subscribe button.
He basically said it without having to say it. That entire video was... Because his tone was different, right? It was his buddies. Yeah. And it was just... It really was. The Riddler TikTok fan is just so funny. What do you guys think of Totoro? I had no idea was and I've been watching him.
I try to avoid trailers. I try to avoid as much as possible.
I don't think I knew he was in it either.
I had no
idea. I didn't know he was in it at all, so it was surprising. I was delighted whenever he shows up. So that was
when he showed up and he killed it in that first scene, I was like, oh, God, this cast is so good.
The cast is good.
Mm-hmm. Paul Dano's Riddler. So... Going way back into the old days of the internet, and even back when I had the internet, it was just text-based in college.
Jesus.
There's always been a corner of the Batman fandom that wanted like a super hardcore Batman serial killer murder mystery where the Riddler was the bad guy. And that's been said online. So it was interesting that they finally did it. Mm. I didn't have a problem with making the Riddler this character. They don't really know what to do with the Riddler. Frank Gorshin is, to me, the iconic Riddler, but he was really just the Joker in that show. Yeah. He was the same character as... He and Cesar Romero were doing the same thing. But to differentiate him, I thought they did a really good job of staying true to the Riddler. And when he took off his mask and he had the glasses on, I was like, oh, shit, he looks just like the Riddler. Staying true to the Riddler's persona, but making him slightly more extreme. I had no problem with the Riddler. I liked the Riddler.
I loved this iteration of the Riddler. I know that we've been talking about this a lot recently because I just read that book, but he really reminded me of the Zodiac.
Yeah. Mm.
I thought that was the first thing that opening scene really took me by surprise. Like, oh, they're really just like going hard on the Zodiac of this. And then the fucking first thing he says, he says, this is the Riddler speaking, you know, just famously the opening line from the Zodiac letters.
Yeah.
I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised at all to hear that was an influence.
Oh, no, 100%. Oh, it was
for sure.
Totally
with the letters, the handwriting, the cipher. the
even
code,
the creepy mask, you know.
Yeah, it's very, and like they said, it's like very functional. It was army surplus, like just how the Zodiac got his stuff, you know, like very military based. Like, I thought he was fantastic.
Well, it was interesting because at some point, at least for me, it was like I almost forgot the Riddler was in the movie because in the middle you get so heavy in on Catwoman, mm-hmm. and the Penguin and the mob.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, right. Still got the Riddler to deal with. So he only comes back at the end. And Mike mentioned earlier how it had a million endings, and it did have several endings. So you think the movie's wrapped up, and then the Riddler unveils his plan, which we should have all seen coming because that's like the classic villain thing, right? You put him in jail, and he unleashes his plan from jail and watches from the
Right. He's not going to turn himself. Yeah, it was John Doe, really, from Seven. It was like Zodiac
right.
and John
Doe. Oh, this is Zodiac plus Seven equals Batman, this movie. He blows the seawall around Gotham, and it floods the city, and that's the whole big mess.
I wish they had established that just a tiny bit.
The seawall, yeah.
Yeah.
I disagree a little bit.
Okay.
I actually really liked that they said, here's a threat, it's already done, where as opposed to other, I feel like other superhero movies could have had Batman trying to disarm the bomb.
No, I'm just talking about the seawall. I just didn't realize that Gotham was surrounded by water. Just even an establishing shot at some point in the movie.
I get you.
At all. Because I was like, oh, shit. Has there been a seawall all around the... And like, I thought it was really fucking cool, and I'm really glad that they did it. I was just really distracted. It just came out of the blue for me, which maybe that was the intention. But I thought maybe if I had seen it, if I knew that not only was there all this corruption suffocating Gotham, but it was also surrounded by like all this Manhattan. Pressure, you know, that might have been an interesting, you know, foreshadowing.
Right.
It's just yeah.
So my thought process was, oh, shit, the movie is over, and now it's doing this thing. And then I thought, yeah. Do we need this? Can we cut this? And I thought, no, this is so, like, comic booky, mm-hmm. you know, there's always a bomb that's going to destroy the city. The hero always stops the bomb. And here, the hero doesn't, and the city is flooded, and lots of people die, and...
Yeah, and he's paralyzed by it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The relentless nature of not just the corruption, but, you know,
the water.
All these forces...
You can't punch water.
Right.
He doesn't spring into action. Like, that entire sequence, where the water is flooding the whole thing, it just holds on him. He's not moving at
all. Yeah, he just looks out the window like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, also, there was an F-bomb in this movie, and it actually, like, my jaw kind of dropped. I don't know why I'm so conservative. But, like, but every time they, like, swore in this movie, I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, well, ooh, saucy.
Yeah, whoa.
Well, la-di-da.
You guys like the end, the whole rescue at Madison Square Garden.
I mean, what's a comic book movie without a set piece at the end like that? But I thought they went about it in a really interesting way. These things come at you so fast. Like, the Riddler has a following. He has a following that's
armed. I like that.
He's in jail. These psychos are going to take care of it. And they're already in there.
I mean, this is a internet-inspired, chat room-based rebellion, right? This, like, murder hole. And I thought, like, wow, this is fucking... It's pretty intense.
The moment when the mayor looks up and sees them all... With their guns pointed at her, I went, oh, fuck.
Yeah, and it got serious real fast. I mean, I thought they killed her. I was like, man, this movie is
I thought so, too. I thought that was kind of a cheap move to let her live. I thought that should just killed her.
Well, these guys aren't marksmen. These are just random dudes.
There was some pretty imagery there, though, when he has the torch and everybody's...
Oh, my God. That's kind of what the whole movie is, right? Like, that child is not scared of him, and he is the light. Like, he needs to lead these people out of here, out of this mess.
There is a line where I think the Riddler says, what's, you know, black and red and blue or whatever. There was a scene where he's in the water, it's the red and blue cop lights, and that is his body, and then followed soon after with him taking everybody to the light, which was terrific. You know, you have a bat never does that, right? And so it was also very, very pretty to look at. So I think while I might have had, I was challenged a bit, like it was like, wow, this keeps on going. At least I wasn't bored by the extra ending. And so
also that action, that set piece is so intense.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed that. I thought it was
cutting the cable.
Baby. Cutting the cable was really cool. And when he gets shot in the chest with a shotgun, I'm like, yeah, his ribs are broken. He cannot move. Like,
yeah.
It was a little schmuck baity when they had the guy point the gun at his head, you know, and like they drew that moment out just a little too long,
just
where it's like, I know you're not going to kill him. Let's keep going.
Right.
It was like 5 seconds too long. Other than that, I thought that whole sequence. And then whatever he shoots in his leg, you know, to keep going.
It was like adrenaline or something.
Yeah. That was wild.
So whatever kind of fucked up serum he's got. And then for a little nerd brain in me for a second, I was like, it's green. Is there a little kryptonite or, you know, like.
Or it could be, it could be also venom, the stuff that Bane took.
I really like because it was like it was a switch and then it flipped. There was a little bit of like a ritual that had to happen, a series of steps for him to actually jack in like that. And it was the first time that I've seen Batman rely on chemicals to make him be superhuman for a second. I thought that was really powerful. Like, even he knew there might be moments when he has to do that. But I just don't think I've ever seen Bruce turn to chemicals before. He might have in the books, but I've never seen him have to, like, power up like that. It's always been his anger or
his
strength.
His iron will.
Yeah, that has gotten him through. And the fact that even he needs a drug, like all these other people, was kind of interesting.
And then the fact that when Gordon approached him, you know.
Yeah.
That was a really cool moment, too. Like, he couldn't.
Gordon was terrific.
Oh,
Jeffrey,
amazing.
I mean, Jeffrey Wright's always terrific, but I thought he was a great Jim Gordon. He felt like he was an equal partner to Batman.
Yeah, the rapport was really spot on.
He was as good of an investigator. Yep. He was just as capable. It wasn't ever like Batman was leading him around. It was like, we are doing this together. Great cops in this movie. Great accents on some of these cops.
Yeah.
The cops really got over Batman beating them all up and running free from the police station, because the next time they saw him, it was all fine again. The 2.55, almost 3-hour running time allowed them to do a lot of things. And yes, it was overwhelming sometimes and long, but if you cut any of these elements out, you lose a lot.
Mm.
On the drive home, I was trying to think, well, where can you cut 30 minutes out of this movie? And I don't know how you can do that without really taking the legs out from under it.
And you know, people apparently are into it. I was looking at the numbers, right? It had 134 million opening, and 34 million of that was Sunday night.
That's when I saw it.
That's when I saw it as well. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of legs it has. But at first I was like, oh man, I got to go to the theater, because I just didn't know when I would see it schedule-wise. But I'm glad that it sort of forced me to get out. And my theater was packed. It was a small theater, admittedly, but it was a sold-out show for most, as far as I could tell.
So was there anything that you guys that you just really didn't like? Any choice that they made, or anything that happened in the story or characters?
I feel like I covered it, but my biggest gripe was just the plot was very complicated, but I feel like they could have pared that down a little bit. The fact that the big event was off screen that they kept talking about, and like there was a lot of backtracking. I feel like they could have maybe adjusted that a little bit to keep it more present, but it never took me out of the story too much. I always felt like I felt what I needed to feel, you know? Yeah. The actors did a really good job of that.
One thing that was kind of fun, Kevin Saunderson is one of the OG techno producers, great DJ, and he did some absolutely insane music for the club stuff. Like, I looked it up after, and I realized, oh, he had done a couple of things, because it was super, super Detroit-y. I haven't heard that kind of music in a mainstream movie before, and I was like, oh my god, they really actually went for it. So
that was fun.
I thought the music was really interesting. Nirvana track, right?
Yeah, they kept dropping that. Yeah, that was really cool. They played that twice.
I thought that was they played those three notes throughout the movie.
Yeah, and they incorporated it into the score. I thought the score was fantastic, and I was really surprised to see that it was Michael Giacchino. Maybe because I
had no idea that was
more
him.
cheerful stuff out of him or something. But I was like, holy shit, this guy can do everything.
That's really amazing. Sort of downer piano that was not your usual sort of hero soundtrack or score.
Again, like something that fits this vision.
Yeah. We also saw what would happen if you took Chicago and you took New York and you meshed them together.
That was funny how they would have three straight shots where it's like New York, Chicago, Northern England, or like whatever. Like,
Scotland.
Where the fuck are we?
So you had Times Square that had a little bit of Piccadilly Circus in the middle of it.
And then a green screen shot that was like all three of them, you know?
Straight up Madison Square Garden.
I liked Alfred from, what was it, the Batman Earth One sort of iteration of him.
Yeah.
Who was the military guy who came in with the cane and everything. So that was kind of a nice take. I felt like I could have used more of him, actually. I mean, they used him.
Yeah, you wonder what got cut, because there definitely was a longer version, obviously. There always is. But you wonder what didn't make it. You got to think maybe some Alfred stuff. There was another Joker scene. We haven't talked about the Joker yet.
Yeah.
So at the end of the movie, when Riddler gets put in Arkham, next door to his cell is... He's called the unseen Arkham prisoner in the credits, but it's the Joker, played by Barry Keoghan? Cohen? Cohen? He's Irish. It could sound like anything. He was listed above the title in the credits.
Oh, wow.
And he played the Joker. And apparently there was another scene earlier in the film in which Batman comes to visit him, Hannibal Lecter style, to get his thoughts on the Riddler. So that got cut, which I think was a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
That is a fact.
Matt Reeves said it in an interview.
That he... Oh, okay.
There was another Joker scene in the middle that he probably put on the DVD.
I feel like that would have been very distracting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have totally been. I like that the world felt lived in. So, like, the scene opens and the thugs in the subway are Joker-inspired. So I was like, okay, we've already had this world. He's already fought the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the midst of this reality. And that was, I thought was great. And having the Joker already be in prison was good. And you never really saw him. He was silhouetted and... Mm-hmm. You saw a little bit of hair and a little bit of messed up face, but you couldn't...
Again, trust the audience that they know based on the voice and the dialogue and the way he's talking and the laughter, like, they're gonna get it. You don't even need to show us, you know? And, like, we saw his, like, spiky hair or whatever for, like, a second, but, like, they'll get it, you know?
I did think it was interesting, the renewal fund being the slush fund. I thought it was interesting that they really went there with Bruce's dad actually having... considered.
Well, that was straight out of Long Halloween, where he saves Carmine Falcone's life on the table, does
That's
the surgery, Bruce watches, and they become friends. There's few things I get really worked up about. One of them is making his parents bad, and I'm glad that they gave us an out.
Yes. You know, I was like, uh-oh.
That he told Carmine to scare this guy, but not to kill him. Carmine killed him.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, but if you get in business with a guy like him, you know what you're getting involved. I mean...
I know, but like at least...
Hey, go solve this problem for me.
The other thing that I think is always
Tony
a mistake
Soprano?
Is giving a name to their killer. And so here it's like, did Falcone kill his parents? And that's always a mistake. I'm sorry.
Ultimately,
always
it doesn't matter, yeah.
Because if Batman can identify the killer, he can end his pain. Whereas if the killer is an anonymous... mugger, all crime is responsible.
Right.
So he can close the book on it if it's someone he can identify, which is so I did, you know, the Joker in Batman 89 was a mistake. In the comics, they even identified the guy. Like, that was always a mistake. It's got to be this guy he could never find.
Yeah.
And that's why he's doing this forever. So anyway, I'm glad that they gave us an out saying, well, I don't think it was a mob hit. It was just a coincidence. So that's fine. It can go either way, and I can live with that.
Bruce is still confused, so we're still confused, and that's all that matters.
Also, having his mom be in Arkham was a new thing. She's never been in Arkham before.
Okay.
But
during the movie, I thought, I'm going to ask Connor about this. But that's not canon, right?
Yeah, in the comics, they gave her the last name of Kane, you know, for Bob Kane. But Arkham and the Waynes were two of the founding families of the city, but they've never had her be a Arkham before. Or have mental illness.
I did love Paul Dano's character as being one of the orphans that was forgotten.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really liked that whole part.
Well, for a second, I thought they were going to do a major swerve on us because the reporter who was digging into Thomas Wayne was named Elliot. And they said he was killed over hush money and they put the word hush on the screen.
Yes.
And dude, Tommy Elliot is hush. Are they going to make the Riddler Tommy Elliot?
Right.
And I thought, well, that's going to be a major change, but they didn't do that. I don't know why they just didn't make him hush to begin with.
Well, you're talking about stuff that got cut. Maybe that's
so. I was like, oh no, are they going to make a really big swerve here? But they didn't. There was a lot of things about income inequality and social inequality that runs through the entire movie, and whether it's more from the forefront.
Lost
or not.
Faith in institutions.
Yeah,
and so Riddler being someone who was initially saved by the Wayne Foundation, but then when Thomas Wayne died and Bruce was a child, it fell apart and he was neglected and it was horrible being in the orphanage. That was interesting.
Yeah.
I came out of it, I was like overwhelmed a little bit. Like, I really need to see it again because you come out of that, you've been basically pummeled in the face for 3 hours of this intense noir thriller. And it's like, well, I don't know. Whoa, what did I just... Well, I liked it, though. I thought it was a cinematic experience. It was terrific.
There was some great fight choreography with the Catwoman, but there was also that really... I thought that using the machine gun flare, the muzzle burst, to do almost like a stop motion, like that was... I thought that was actually so good.
I agree. I think that was fantastic, and it really reminded me of the only enjoyable moment in Star Wars Rogue One, where at the end, with Vader...
Yeah.
It reminded me of that scene.
Yeah.
I don't know if that tickled anyone else's.
That was cool.
I've severed that movie from my memory, but I remember that part of it.
Oh, God. should we take a hard left and make this a Rogue One podcast? A movie I haven't seen in, since I ran out of the theater.
Let's talk about what happens when you have two people direct one movie.
Yep.
I thought, first of all, this needed to be seen on the big screen. From the sound design and the art direction, you don't want this in your house where there's light noise and you get distracted and you're on your phone because he's staring at a clue for 5 minutes.
That didn't stop anyone else in my theater.
Oh, really?
Really?
I think this is the last time I ever go to a multiplex like this. I'm done.
Oh, which one did you go to?
Really?
They're usually pretty good.
The crowd was repulsive.
No way.
I thought about it after the movie. I was like, you know, people have been just used to, from COVID, people are just used to watching movies in their living room, and they think they're in their living room right now. Like, one person was on Instagram the entire movie. One person was playing a racing game on their phone where they had to rotate their phone to steer.
I've never seen that.
People behind us were talking. The people to the right of us were talking. The woman to the right of us kept live commenting on the movie.
What?
And then at one point said, how much time is left? And her boyfriend just pulled his phone out and he goes, about an hour.
Wow.
And she goes, damn, an hour?
No. I was like, okay,
so I guess there's an hour left.
That's unusual for that theater.
That's my go-to theater. I've never had that happen in my
life. I can't imagine what it's going to take to get me back.
Wow.
I don't really see a lot of, you know, like...
New
box office-y kind of...
Yeah.
Movies that play this theater and that only play this theater. When's the next time I'm going to do this? Like, Batman 2? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's I'll try really interesting next time, but I'm not, I don't need to do that.
Wow.
It's on HBO Max in 45 days.
Yeah. Huh.
That's a bummer.
Just fucking terrible.
I wonder if how many other people have had that same experience where this is the first movie that they've gone to in quite a while. I did not have that experience in Dune, but I saw that at a big ass single serving kind of theater.
Right. I thought that I was going to get that a little more here because it's opening weekend. People are so excited to see the movie. Yeah. You're not getting people who are just like, yeah, let's just go see a fucking movie, whatever. Like, the people were very excited. It was a pretty full theater for a Sunday evening, and no, it was just fucking terrible. Wow. Even the people who were enjoying the movie.
Wow. Interesting.
Oh, wow, this is violent. Oh, wow, this scene's really long. I can't really see his eyes.
That's
Are we going to see Catwoman again?
Oh, no.
You know, just a lot of stuff like that. I was just like, they think they're in their fucking living room.
That's
upsetting. I went to two movies at last week.
Oh,
and
wow.
Did not have a problem.
Interesting.
But
well, good for you.
I go
Hank
odd
invites
times.
It. Hank invites it, yeah.
So any final thoughts on The Batman?
Mike, I'll let you go first.
No, it's like, you know what? It's kind of one of those things that the more I get a chance to talk about it, the more I appreciate it. You know, I was never bored. I never left to go to the bathroom or anything like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So how did everybody deal with it? Like,
I was fine with it. And I had a big old thing of water. I mean, I had some food, but...
That's risky.
I actually thought the pacing was pretty consistent throughout. Yeah, obviously, there were some scenes that might have gone a little bit too on here and there. But at the end of the day, I thought it was a pretty spare movie, even despite its length. There wasn't a lot. I don't think there was a lot of fat on there. Maybe scene to scene. Maybe Hank has some more. But I was surprised how much I liked it.
I'm just thinking that if you... We're talking about stuff that was cut. It was probably the fat. I mean, the way that movie feels is probably because they cut everything out that they didn't need. I agree. There was no drop in that movie or lull in the movie. But I think the real test of the length was when the Riddler goes into incarceration.
Yeah.
I think it probably happened around the 2-hour mark. That is an extra act on the movie that you don't expect. And when those things happen, I think that you internalize, like, oh, shouldn't the movie be over now? And like, oh, we're still going? But they played it really well. I didn't have any issue with it.
You sort of mentally prepare yourself. This is the movie's wrapping up, and then you're not.
It's yeah.
Like, then you're in a war with your
all
bladder.
That structure's internalized. We've all seen 1,000 movies. We know how.
There was a point about an hour and a half into the movie, and I was prepared. Like, I didn't consume anything for at least an hour before the movie. No water, no food, nothing.
And how'd you do?
And about an hour and a half into the movie, I was like, oh man, I really gotta pee. And then like I went into like lockdown.
Yeah.
I think it was like years of going to Comic Cons and working and not being able to go to the bathroom, where I'm like, my body can go into survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
I did it during Blade Runner. It can go into survival mode unless, Michael, I used to go drinking before movies, and then that was a different story. But I like shut it down and didn't bother me. Yeah. But then the movie was over. I waited to the end of the fucking credits.
Oh yeah, can you let us know?
Yeah, first of all, fuck that.
I didn't see it. I didn't. Whitney wanted to.
I warned
home.
Both you guys. I warned you both.
No, you know, you did not warn us properly. You did not warn us properly.
You said
it was a thing. You should have said it was a waste of time.
I said you don't need to wait for it.
But what was it?
I'll tell you. The Riddler text comes up and it says goodbye ? And goes away. That's it. It's just the Riddler text. It was not any footage. It was fucking nothing.
Oh.
It should have said, fuck you.
You're still here?
Yeah. It's people got to clean this fucking theater up.
I think it was a play on the idea that these movies always have something important. And I realize that's kind of dumb. Just don't have it.
Yeah, don't have it.
Yeah, put
it in. As soon as that was over, I bolted out of there to go to the bathroom. But anyway, that was the Batman. What do you guys give it out of 5 stars?
Oh.
Jeez, I haven't done that. So you know what? I'll go bold. I'll say like 4.5 out of 5. Mm. I think that, again, like I said at the beginning, you can knock this movie for what it isn't.
Sure.
Or your expectations. But if you take in this movie for what it is, which is a really singular, unique vision for a superhero movie in an era where there's so much homogenization about these movies, having one feel different and feel specific and really have a vision is so rewarding and so refreshing that I just really enjoyed it top to bottom. It's not perfect, but it is really great. I'm not ready to compare it to the other movies yet. I didn't know it was part of a trilogy, so I mean, there's more to take in.
He hasn't said that. They haven't said that, but like, it seems like that's what they're building. You know, they always want a trilogy.
Oh, totally. This movie ends with it. But like, there's so much emotion to this movie, and there's so much their take on Bruce Wayne is just this damaged, fucked up guy. You know.
Yep.
I thought it was really fantastic, and I'm really happy they made it.
I love the Marvel movies, but this is sort of your counterpoint to the producer-driven Marvel films, where it doesn't really matter who the director is for the most part.
Yeah.
This is very much the director's vision. That's what Warner Brothers does with DC films, for better or for worse, usually for worse.
Did you get the trailer at the beginning, the DC trailer, where it showed Black Adam?
What the fuck was that about?
It was.
You're showing me a trailer for the movie I'm going to watch in 3 minutes. Well, no,
but I mean, it was framed in context of these other things that.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, I'm not going to watch any of this. I am not watching any of those movies.
You're not going to watch The Flash because it has Michael Keaton returning as Batman?
No, I do not care.
Okay.
Michael Keaton's fan. Well, I don't know. Maybe if you say it's great, I don't know. I did forget about the Affleck movies until like this morning.
This was supposed to be Ben Affleck Batman movie. That was supposed to be the solo film coming out of the Justice League.
I think Pattinson showed the people's skepticism, and he just
I thought he's a great actor.
So good. I thought he'd really,
he's a great
really
actor. Actor.
He's great.
He's so weird looking, and so tall, and so strange.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that they.
I love it.
That they were like, "What if the Batman's really hot?"
Well, I think that people would say the same for Christian Bale, but.
Yeah.
Mike, Hank gave it a 4.5 out of 5.
I'm so enthusiastic about Hank's, like, I like what Hank is saying. You should judge a film by what it is and not what you hoped or whatever your preconceived notions are. If people are like, well, it was so depressing, it was too dour, if Batman is so, like, dark, this is that kind of movie. And I think that they were unrelenting and uncompromising in making a film that way. I think Selena Kyle, Zoe Kravitz, adds kind of a mirth and an energy that was a great counterpoint and helped the movie never fall energy-wise. And so, it's the new me. It's a new year. I don't have to wear a mask sometimes. Most times, I'm going to give it 4.5 too. I love, I'm going off. I'm drafting off of Hank's optimism. I love it.
All right. I'm going to give it a 4.45. Just because.
Wow. So you hated this movie.
Yeah. I hated it.
Why you got to be such a hater?
God. I just, because I want to see it again. I really did like it. You know, I'm somewhere in the 4.25, 4.5 range. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it again.
Who would have thought, though, right? Who would have thought when I heard about this film, like, do we need yet another Batman movie?
But also, like, this is what you're supposed to fucking do. You know, like, we have all that other stuff. Give me something new.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm excited for whatever sequels they make, and I'm excited for the eventual recasting of Batman for another franchise in 8 years.
Well, this is as close to me as getting that year one experience, right? That of the book.
Yeah.
This is as close as I think we'll probably ever get to that book, and I'm grateful for it.
Well, there's a lot of that book to it. They said year one, Long Halloween, and Batman Ego were the three things they looked at for this movie.
Oh, I'm sorry. One last note on the movie.
Yeah.
The Shakespeare bust and him running down a building.
Oh, that was great. That was
fantastic.
Great.
Fantastic.
There were lots of little things like that.
The strange glider suit.
Oh, and how he couldn't really use it that well. And Peter Sarsgaard, who came in and crushed it for those 2 or 3 scenes.
Yeah, wait. Who? Oh, I'll
Sarsgaard was the DA.
He was the DA.
Oh, right.
okay.
Yeah.
Which is funny because his wife played the assistant DA in the Nolan films.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Funny.
Yeah. Funny. So that's it for the Batman. You can obviously listen to our Pick of the Week show every week where Josh Flanagan and I talk about the week's comics. We have our monthly interview Talksplode show that alternates with our monthly graphic novel review show called Booksplode. And we do those every month thanks to the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. And we'll be back for the next special edition at some point. I don't know what the next film is anymore.
What is it?
But
I wonder.
I literally don't know.
We're doing the new Top Gun movie.
Yeah, we'll be back for Top Gun Maverick. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
Thank you, and I'm Mike.
I'm Hank. Thanks for having me. That was super fun.
That was super fun. It's great.
Shorter than the movie. Something in the way. Something in the way. Yeah. Something in the way. Something in the way. Yeah. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it. You know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/ifanboy.